Studio 360.
And remaining gentlemen.
And here are the all-male nominees.
You know, that's just an enormous platform. It might get people information that they never heard of before. It might introduce them to a proposition that they never heard of before.
So I want all the girls watching here and now to know that a new day is on the horizon.
You know, storytelling's your job. It's what you just won an award for. Share a moving anecdote or an inspiring journey. Do something different. You know, entertain us.
It will be because of a lot of magnificent women, many of whom are right here in this room tonight, and some pretty phenomenal men fighting hard to make sure that they become the leaders who take us to the time when nobody ever has to say me too again.
That, of course, was Oprah Winfrey and some other memorable bits from the Golden Globes Awards in January, which this year was an unusually political event. So what's in store now for the Oscars? Could this year's Academy Awards really be just another year of thanking God, the spouse, and the team at CAA and then getting played off stage? One of the producers of the show told the New York Times she hoped the broadcast would be, quote, a giant commercial for the movie business. In other words, better if politics doesn't overshadow the Hollywood boosterism. But are the award winners all going to play along? Or when some of them accept their awards, will they point out what they do not accept about the rampant sexual harassment in their industry? Or maybe, for instance, about American gun culture? We've asked two people to help us reckon with just how political the Oscars might get and to look back at political moments that have gone well and badly in the past. First, Alyssa Rosenberg from The Washington Post, who writes about politics and pop culture, breaks down for us the kinds of political moments we've seen before at the Oscars.
You've seen sort of this narrowing of the way that, you know, actors and directors talk about politics at the Academy Awards. And you have a couple of categories of speeches. You have Halle Berry, you know, talking about breaking a barrier, which she undisputably did.
It's for every nameless, faceless woman of color that now has a chance because his door tonight has been opened.
You're almost never going to get booed at the Oscars or criticized for being a clueless actor if what you're saying is, yay, America's made progress on race, everything is awesome, which is less nuanced than what she actually said, of course. But, you know, if you look back at some of the historical speeches where actors have talked about politics or they've sent other people in their stead to talk about politics, the moments have been just a lot rawer in some instances. I mean, if you look at Sachin Littlefeather's speech, you know, when she's accepting the Oscar on behalf of Marlon Brando in 1973.
For The Godfather.
Right.
I'm representing Marlon Brando this evening, and he has asked me to tell you in a very long speech, which I cannot share with you presently because of time, but I will be glad to share with the press afterwards, that he very regretfully cannot accept this very generous award. And the reasons for this being are the treatment of American Indians today by the film industry, excuse me.
That speech is so polite, and people boo her. I mean, it's really harsh.
But I wonder if in that case it wasn't partly just people were angry about Marlon not showing up, right?
I think that's absolutely the case, right? I mean, he's saying this woman, these causes are more important to me than being congratulated by you in person, right? I mean, it is this rejection of the Academy. He's saying the thing that I care about is the thing that all of you do unthinkingly all of the time.
So a different version of turning political was last year when Ezra Edelman won Best Documentary Feature for O.J. Made in America.
But I want to acknowledge that I wouldn't be standing here tonight if not for two people who aren't here with us, Ron Goldman, Nicole Brown. This is for them and their families. It is also for others, the victims of police violence, police brutality, racially motivated violence, and criminal injustice. This is their story, as well as Ron Nicole's.
What I thought was really deft about that speech is his argument that what happened to Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman and the fact that their families did not get justice for them is not something you can separate from police brutality and police racism in America, right? You know, if you care about justice for Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman, you have to care about justice for the LAPD's victims, because the LAPD's history of victimizing black and brown people in Los Angeles is what made it possible for OJ's defense attorneys to win an acquittal. And, it's not a flashy speech. It's pretty subdued in terms of his tone of voice. But I think he makes that pivot really carefully, you know, really succinctly. And that's not a kind of argument we see on an Oscar stage very often.
I want to go back now to a much more controversial moment, Vanessa Redgrave winning the Best Actress Oscar in 1978.
That in the last few weeks you've stood firm and you have refused to be intimidated by the threats of a small bunch of Zionist hoodlums whose behavior is an insult to the stature of Jews all over the world and to their great and heroic record of struggle against fascism and oppression.
Now, you heard the boos a little bit, but man, the boos got louder and went on. And I don't know of any other Oscar speech where the speaker lost a crowd like Vanessa Redgrave did that night.
Well, and you have Patty Chayefsky get up after she speaks and directly refute her.
To Ms. Redgrave, that her winning an Academy Award is not a pivotal moment in history, does not require a proclamation, and a simple thank you would have sufficed.
I mean, I think that's an interesting case because Redgrave doesn't lay it out in the speech at all, but she was talking about Jewish protests of a documentary she'd made called The Palestinian. And so I think part of what was going on there was the sense that the speech was sort of self-interested, right? That, you know, she is making her own movie and really herself into this political cause in a way that is kind of self-indulgent or inappropriate.
And that onstage moment with the screenwriter Patty Chayefsky, who had won an Oscar the year before for his highly political film, Network, that was clearly unplanned. He was celebrated for what he did. You could hear the audience cheering. But how do those extemporaneous political moments usually fly?
Yeah, I mean, I think that ad-libbing often makes people uncomfortable at the Academy Awards because they're supposed to be this sort of seamless spectacle. And the sort of the moments of sort of overflowing emotion or going off script are supposed to be moments of gratitude, right? There's supposed to be Halle Berry just completely losing it as she accepts the Academy Award for Best Actress. They're not supposed to be people saying, you know, I have this thing to say that is actually more important than the proceedings. Because on the night of the Oscars, nothing is supposed to be more important than the proceedings. And anything that punctures that bubble, I think, makes people in the audience a little itchy.
I would not be standing here if it weren't for two very important men in my life. So, two that I haven't spoken with in a while, but I had the pleasure of just the other evening, Mr. Raleigh Farnsworth, who was my high school drama teacher.
That is Tom Hanks accepting the Best Actor Oscar for his performance in the movie Philadelphia 25 years ago. And it is a political Oscar speech that my next guest, Cody Keenan, thinks is maybe the best ever.
I know that my work in this case is magnified by the fact that the streets of heaven are too crowded with angels. We know their names. They number 1,000 for each one of the red ribbons that we wear here tonight.
Just in case there are any Oscar nominees listening, that is a perfect Oscar speech. It was short. It was to the point. He wasn't afraid to be emotional, and you shouldn't be afraid to be emotional. I mean, you've just achieved the pinnacle of your profession. It's totally okay to be emotional. And he told a story.
Cody Keenan was part of Barack Obama's speechwriting team from the 2008 campaign on, starting off as an intern and then becoming the president's director of speechwriting. And he is still Obama's chief speechwriter.
You know, we don't necessarily, we don't do it in character, but we do read speeches out loud before we give it to him just to see if the cadence works, if a sentence is too long and you have to take a breath. Sometimes you can even tell if there's a missing syllable or if you just need one more syllable. But, you know, speeches are meant for the ear, not the eye. So you definitely want to do it out loud to yourself.
There have been and continue to be community centers where we organize for jobs and justice. Yes, sir. Places of scholarship and network.
Now, Cody, you had to write a lot of eulogies for President Obama to deliver. The one that made me choke up, and I do not cry easily, was in 2015 after the white supremacist murdered 9 black people at the Charleston church. And then Obama spoke at that church about the importance of church in the African-American community.
Places where children are loved and fed and kept out of harm's way and told that they are beautiful and smart and taught that they matter. That's what happens in church. That's what the black church means. Our beating heart. The place where our dignity as a people is inviolate.
It's the one speech that he worked on more than any other. I remember taking him a draft the night before, and he called me back to the residence about 5 hours later, and he'd thrown out the last 2 pages and completely rewritten them the longhand. But for that passage in particular, I called up about 2 days before. I called up the president's personal pastor, a guy named Joshua Dubois, and just said, "Tell me about the black church." And a lot of those lines came verbatim from him. And I remember the president added the lines, "Our beating heart, the place where our dignity as a people is inviolable." And I just thought it was beautiful.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound.
The families actually forgave the killer in court. And he was really struck by that, and he came up with the idea of, let's talk about the concept of grace. That morning on Marine One, you know, as he stood up, we'd just gotten to Andrews, and he stood up to get off the helicopter, and he looked down at us and said, you know, if it feels right, I might sing it. And I said, you do you.
So it is not likely, I don't think, that anybody at the Oscars will achieve the pitch perfection of that. But nominees, if you are thinking about making some kind of political speech from the Oscar stage this year, we asked Alyssa and Cody for their biggest pieces of advice for doing that successfully.
I think find a reason why you're the right messenger for this. You don't have to have a mother or a sister or a daughter to be upset about Me Too. You know, I would find somebody or something that really motivates you. What was the first thing that ticked you off? You know, of course, make sure that your own record is clear on this before you go do it, because that would be awkward. We can try our best to be empathetic. But I'd say for whatever anybody wants to weigh in on, do it authentically. You know, make sure you mean it. Make sure the moment is right.
I think when actors and directors and producers go up there and model really effective, thoughtful political communication, I think that's really useful. It's easy to say that people in the entertainment industry are detached or protected from the vicissitudes of real life, although obviously, as we've learned over the past 4 or 5 months, that's just not the case at all. Yeah, I'm rooting for them to do a good job because God knows Americans need lessons in how to talk to each other right now.
That was Alyssa Rosenberg, who writes about pop culture and politics for The Washington Post, as well as Cody Keenan, who is still chief speechwriter for President Barack Obama. Thanks to both of them.